Hello, welcome again to Comic Con Stories. Today we are doing the final part of our three-parter Transformers in Comics. We're doing the IDW. Yeah, this is good, ready for a bumpy ride because, oh boy, it doesn't get bumpy. Nor goes my co-host, JD from Saskatoon.
It's not going to be that bad, Ben.
Also with this is Red Ink.
IDW needs to be fucking fired.
And also with us, a brother from another podcast, the TV's Mr. Neil.
Proceed on your way to oblivion.
Damn it, I should have said that.
I accept your terms.
Megatron, is that you? Here's a hint.
So, as much fun as it would be to do random Transformers quotes for a whole hour, I think we do have to talk about the IDW series. So, let's just attack the elephant in the room. Red.
What?
Megatron, born a slave, became a gladiator, became a resistance leader and resistance hero, with robo hair under his helmet.
Go. Oh my god!
Go.
Okay,
that
I
didn't
actually
happen.
It happened.
Go.
I fucking read the comic, alright? I tried, JT. I fucking tried to catch up on this comic. And there's 12 years of fucking bullshit. And I'm sorry I couldn't get through it all in a week. I got through a big chunk of it, though. And I regard this as, I don't even fucking regard this as actual Transformers. Even though they're trying to pretend to be G1, they're not. I consider this like the ultimate series. Like, Ultimate Marvel.
An alternate take.
Yes. And, oh my, Megatron is not a fucking tragic hero. And trying to, okay, this is how I figured it out. Somebody at IDW watched Gladiator and was like, hey, what if we make fucking Megatron Maximus? And that's the whole fucking deal with his origin.
And talk about his robo hair.
This robo hair is retarded.
He takes off his helmet. And by the way, it turns out that's a helmet. That's on his head the whole fucking, like, ever.
Bullshit. His helmet is his hair. It's a robot mullet. It doesn't come off, goddammit.
He didn't take his hair off. He took off the armor that was over top it.
I'm talking about the actual G1 helmet that he always had on. Oh, I'm no, saying that's his hair.
Yeah, and G1, I mean, this. Yeah, Red's not far off. This is the ultimate Transformers universe, but I mean, you can make, it's not that he has to be a tragic hero, but you can, like, any good villain, like, great villains, you can empathize with somewhat, and that's what they did with the Megatron in this universe, is, like, the writers that have worked on these various miniseries and ongoings over the years, they've actually created a actual society for the Transformers outside of, you know, good robots versus bad robots. I mean, they have the ideas of functionism, which basically if you turn into, like, Megatron, for example, there's this thing called forging and cold constructed in terms of how the Transformers are bred. Like, Forge is they kind of grow out of the material that Cybertron is made out of, and they get, like, these naturally occurring sparks, and then there's Cold Constructed, because there was this whole thing where there were so many sparks, they ran out of material to make these bodies, so they constructed bodies, kind of like how they did in the Marvel comics, and that's, you know, so, but if you're, Megatron was born a miner, so that's why he was put to work in the Energon mines on part of Cybertron, but he wanted to be a medic. But society said, you're a miner, so you got to dig shit out of the ground. And he started this, it was a peaceful protest. He wrote, you know, pamphlets and treaties, and he was trying to start a revolution, you know, with that. And when it didn't go the way he wanted, then all of a sudden violence became the thing, you know, kind of how real world terrorists happen with politically minded people. Not everything they've written in this series has been gold, mind you, because I can hear Red's blood pressure climbing as I speak these words. But I mean, stuff like that, I mean, that's no one ever did before. You know, it's like when you look at originally Magneto was just this evil mutant. Mutants are better, man. And then you get his backstory of having survived the Holocaust and just had some really shitty experiences with humans. I mean, the more you can relate and empathize with a villain, I think makes them a better villain overall, not necessarily that he became a hero.
See, he didn't start off, like, he started off as a miner, then he became a fucking gladiator.
Well, yeah, because they closed the mine, automated it, fired everybody, so what else was he supposed to do?
They're already robots. How can you replace robots with fucking robots? There's no fucking logic in this comic whatsoever.
Well, that's only if you consider that the robots being replaced by robots, that none of them actually have, none of them have sentience.
I'm going to predict that somebody's going to fucking come back to this comic, and they're going to do a fucking comic where those little robots that replaced the fucking Megatron have sparks, and they're going to rebel, and it's going to be some kind of fucking stupid, epic, fucking retarded comic.
Well, they can't do that because those mines are tapped out and...
Okay, let's talk about the plot of Transformers. Neil, what was the second verse to the opening of the cartoon again?
Autobots wage the battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons.
Okay, we have all the backstory we need. Go.
Well, it was also a war over resources, and that's basically what the first two seasons were. And admittedly, it got a little limited in that scope. It's like every episode had the same basic plot, you know, aside from stupid episodes like Power Glide's girlfriend and the time Sea Spray turned into a human. But anyway, I see the thing about this thing about making Megatron relatable is that I didn't really hear anything that makes him relatable. My philosophy would be, There has to be something actually, I don't know, there that we can kind of chew on. Because what I would have done is like make it so that the Autobots, you know, did something questionable, and you know sort of like what I used to talk about with Anakin, how if you kind of make a shade of gray for each side, you can kind of understand him turning, and you know, kind of going back on principles and stuff like that. So you understand why he's turning evil, but if, I don't know, it doesn't... to use a unintentional pun, it's kind of robotic how it's explained. There's not really a conflict with another person, per se. It's just, you know, Megatron having a bad, you know, life.
Well, yeah, no, and I understand that. See, the beautiful but also aggravating thing about the IDW Transformer comics and kind of having this conversation is it makes sense if you're there from the beginning. Now, you know, you could, most people, kind of like Red, you could try to like deep dive and read all these comics and, you know, try and catch up. And if you do that all at once, then it still doesn't quite make sense because you're trying to like cram, you know, 12 years of comics lore into your head in like a little over a week. I've been there since the beginning, so you know, I've read all of the comics. Like, I've got, this is one of the most complete collections I have in my comics collection, is the IDW Transformers stuff. So yeah. I mean, it, no.
What?
Not gonna have. Ben, Red wants me to burn my comics, and I'm not gonna do that. No, from the beginning, if you read it from the beginning, you know, it gets there, and it's.
It'll be like the episode of The Simpsons where all of a sudden they toss out the fire, and he says, "Not even the fire wants him."
No, it's not quite like that.
It'd be like Homer's underwear where a demon fucking escapes.
Yeah, that's a different thing. But I mean, the thing is, they put a lot of work into fleshing out the Transformers to get them beyond Autobots waging their battle against the evil forces of the Decepticons. Because, I mean, it gets back, you go back into the, you know, before the war. Like I said, you have this thing of functionism. There's also, there's this concept called Emperada and Shadow Play, which is, I guess, some of... I read an interview with the writers. It was on Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, one of the two ongoing series they had at the time. And this is based... Some of the origins of this idea is based in stuff that societies have done to dissidents in, you know, times past, where in the Transformers, if, you know, somebody got too uppity and tried to, you know, I want to be a doctor instead of a cargo hauler, they would take you to this secret facility and, like, you know, replace one of your hands with, like, a cannon and replace your head, or they would, like, you know, rewire your brain so you become a different person, which is kind of how we got the cycloptic mad scientist known as Shockwave. He was originally a senator in the Cybertronian government, and he started to speak out about the people that there was apartheid against Transformers who had singular special powers, kind of like how Windcharger has his magnetic powers, you know, like in the G1 cartoon.
Well, did you just say Transformers and apartheid in the same goddamn sentence?
And it's literally what they do in the comic, Ben.
God damn it.
Okay, they literally treat it the same way as apartheid in South Africa. They actually apply that concept to Transformers by way of, like I said, with singular individuals who have powers. And Senator Shockwave tried to, you know, create a society, like he tried to alter the society so they're accepted.
Tell us about Senator Ratbat.
I'm getting to that, don't worry. So they literally fuck with Shockwave's mind and body and turn him into the purple ray gun blasting asshole that we know. And then there's Senator Ratbat, who literally was reworked. It's just like the G1 Marvel comic continuity. He is a Transformer who's obsessed with wealth and power, except in this continuity, he was a giant transforming bat from the beginning. I'm not saying everything makes sense. It's just you have to give it a chance.
They've actually explained in those comics why Transformers can take on Earth animals.
Yeah, because...
Before they even came to Earth.
Yeah.
And it's because of one of the primes has like a fucking magic mask that can look into other planets and shit, and that's how they discovered other forms of life.
That's one of the ways. I mean, they also had Cybertronian wildlife billions of years ago.
No.
We're overthinking things here.
Okay, so
that's the whole fucking problem with this goddamn series. It's overthought. Somebody at fucking IDW forgot that this is a fucking series for kids. This is not your goddamn Spartacus. College thesis. It's not your fucking Spartacus. It's not...
It's not like this from the beginning. It's not like this all from the beginning. I mean, the original IDW, like the continuity for the comics... starts at about 2006 with one of the first miniseries, which was Infiltration. There's Infiltration and then Escalation, and where did I put my goddamn list? There we go. It was Infiltration, Escalation, and Devastation. And this is literally as the Decepticons are first making contact with Earth in the modern day. Then the Autobots get in. And it kind of goes from there. And over time, they start going back to explain, you know, give you reasons why there are certain Transformers the way they are, like RC.
Okay, Brad, talk about RC.
I will let JT lay the ground before I fucking cut it down.
He's cut it down.
Well, give me a chance to get started, Ben, before you start pulling the rug out from under me. In one of there was a trilogy of miniseries, Autocracy, Monstrosity, and Primacy. We're introduced to RC and Galvatron. They are Spark Brothers. They're twins within the society. RC is okay, a dude at right this
here.
Point.
Pause right here. I just want to get Neil's reaction to those words. Spark Brother, Twin, Galvatron. Neil, reaction.
Bullshit. I mean, just as someone who grew up with the property, it's like whenever I hear these stories where they're going way off into left field, I'm like, what are you talking about? RC and Galvatron, two characters who never had anything to do with each other before. And it's just, it's what it feels like is Marvel, or no, not Marvel, Hasbro and IDW are just kind of getting together and being like, okay, we got to make more stories. We're just going to shuffle things around and not really pay attention to what the original stories were. And I understand that you can't do the Sunbow series as a comic book, but at the same time, it's like, this is a little too complex for Transformers, especially when you get into the gender thing. And look, I knew that they were in trouble the moment they introduced Alita 1, because, you know, robots, you know, gender and robots don't really make sense because they're robots. They don't breed. So, and I'm sorry, but back in the 80s, like, I know this isn't accepted now, but like back then, he and him were just the default, you know, pronouns you would use. Zero, so that's Zim? What. Yeah, there was none of that. But then you introduce female robots, and I'm like, oh man, this is going to get into politics, because now you've introduced gender into robots, and it's, well, just something.
I can explain that.
There's actually a story with that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, the whole idea from the beginning in the IDW verse, like, there were, in terms of their general construction, there were male and female forms, although they never had gender. And then you have the scientist Gaxis, you know, kidnaps RC.
Say that again. Scientist Gaxis.
Gaxis. If that's how you pronounce it, I have never been able to find a correct pronunciation. It's spelled Jhiaxus. So I'm going with Gaxis. Gaxis, whatever. He experiments on RC, who his first form, it basically looks like the Galvatron action figure from the 80s that came out post the movie. And over, you know, millions of years, he's experimented on, and he's forcibly, you know, sex changed into a She-Bot.
Lock now, off of me.
They just don't have Robo Wangs. There's no lopping off. I swear to God, I'm going to crawl through the internet to Texas and bitch slap you.
This is a long story. Just let JT get through it, please.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Red. So, there is, and it would take too long to explain, but there is a storyline that in the last couple of years that introduced the concept of Titans, which is essentially Metroplex isn't the only city transformer. There were 13 of these things that took some transformers and went off to establish colonies in other worlds. And then these colonies lost contact with Cybertron, and something happened where most of the females went with these Titans, and everyone just eventually forgot. It's like when something actually happens in society and then it fades into myth over the course of time. So come forward to more or less the present day, a few years before the Transformers make landfall on Earth the second time. And there's a whole lot of other stuff there where some of the guy formers run into RC, and I honestly don't know what the preferred nomenclature is.
She
calls him out. See, you don't even realize you're doing it. He, that works. She calls him out on it. It's like, see, you're saying she instead of he. Like, it's this, they never explain how there's this subconscious thing of how all the guy bots start referring to RC in the feminine, even when they don't actually have gender. And this is purely the result of this mad scientist, you know, butchering his body. And it goes on from there. Eventually they introduce like Alita 1 and Windblade and, you know, Riptide and all these other female transformers that when they're reintroduced into the story, and everyone's just like, oh yeah, I just kind of forgot you guys existed, which is kind of they just literally just, hey, female transformers, they're back. They weren't guys before they were females. They're just always this way, and they everyone just forgot. And even I have to admit, that's really fucking stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how RC happened. She is a post-op tranny bot.
See, in the beginning when Transformers was first created, they originally intended Ratchet to be female. But
literally Nurse Ratchet.
Yeah. Hasbro said that these are toys for boys and we don't want any fucking female characters. So when the Transformers movie came out, one of the original creators of Transformers actually had to fight to get RC put in the movie.
Yeah.
And that's after they had the episode with Alita 1 and the female Autobots in... That was season 2, right?
3?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the one with Alita 1 is season 2.
Yeah, because there's the one where the aerial bots go back in time and you see the origin of Optimus Prime going from Orion to Optimus, but then there's a later episode where it's the modern day on Cybertron and Alita 1 and a couple of others are still there fighting against the Decepticons.
Okay.
I mean, it's a finger quotes cool story. I mean, again, like Red was saying before, that there's a lot of stuff they overthought. Like the whole idea of creating a society with like the functionism and, you know, racial hatred amongst the Transformers, that's a cool idea.
I think there's problems with it, though.
Yeah, I'm not saying the whole comics are perfect. I'm just saying they're not as bad as people make them out to be.
The biggest problem is, you know, these are robots. They, you know, there is something to the functionalism, but that was handled, you know, I think much cleaner and, again, you know, much more succinct and precisely in the you know the cartoon universe, where a Decepticon is a machine is a transformer built for military defense, while an Autobot is one that's built for like labor. That's how it was originally handled.
Yeah,
Optimus was rebuilt by Alpha. What's his name?
Trion.
Alpha Trion. As a way to, as one of the first Autobot upgrades to be able to combat the Decepticons head on. I mean, technically before that, there were no Legacy of Primes.
Yeah. I just want to point out that was contradicted many times in the cartoon. Specifically in season 3, like right at the beginning, when they had that huge flashback and basically rewrote the whole origin of the Transformers.
Where they were built by the what's it called?
By the Quintessons. The war happened almost immediately.
The name Prime, being the leader, didn't start until the Transformers movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like Optimus Prime's name was just his fucking name. It had nothing to do with being the leader. And
in fact, they didn't upgrade Ultra Magnus's name when they handed the Matrix over to him. So.
Yeah, and then when Rodimus became, or Hot Rod became Rodimus Prime, that's when the Prime meant the leader.
That's when they created the Prime Directive.
But I attribute that to the fans that kind of built that lore into the series when it wasn't really there. Because I do know that some of the leaders that were shown in the flashbacks, they do have names, and they aren't Primes.
Yeah.
Well, the multiple prime thing comes from Bayformers.
I think it was before that, even.
No, these comics started like the year, 2 years before the Bayformers, but they didn't, and eventually they incorporated the 13 primes into the greater continuity. But I think Red's right that the, you know, the legacy of the Primes kind of started with the Bayformer franchise.
The biggest thing is it's now a mess, because we're talking about a series about, like Neil said earlier, Autobots waging their battle to defeat the evil forces of the Decepticons. Now we have apartheid, we have political intrigue, we have Starscream named by one of the Titans as going to be the next great leader of Cybertron, so all of a sudden everyone's voting for him to be the leader, even though he's fucking goddamn Starscream.
Okay, Blanchard, calm down. You are having the exact same reaction that Blanchard had all those years ago when we said that X-Men Evolution was the better. I'm not done then.
Your problem, JT, is you're acting like I'm doing this from a perspective of just a fan of the G1 cartoon. No, if you read the comics itself, Starscream is still a deceptive motherfucker that will fucking kill you the second you turn your back to him. And the idea that all these people are going to forget that Starscream is like a quadruple crosser just because a Titan said something is fucking ridiculous.
Ben, lately, like within the past, let's say, 3-4 years,
yeah,
Transformers IDW has been a soapbox for the writers. So Starscream becoming the leader is actually commentary on Trump.
Of course it is.
And they built up to him becoming the leader of Cybertron. And yeah, he's still the backstabber to end all backstabbers. But characters can change.
He killed, what's his name, the pacifist Tron that actually was his best friend. He killed him. Like this first second he got a chance to. And he was his fucking best friend and the only guy that believed in him.
Yeah, and he literally is a conflicted character. I'm not excusing it, but you can have a guy who's scum and still have him be conflicted about his things and have him question himself, which is what they've done with Starscream. Like, once they got rid of Earth as the major backdrop for the conflict, and they've largely, you know, the Autobot-Decepticon war is largely over and done with, since most of the people living on Cybertron now are non-affiliated and would rather these two groups, you know, GTFO.
And that's, you know, the thing else I have a problem with are the non-aligns. Go ahead, though, DT. I'll explain my problem with the non-aligns after you're finished.
I don't know. I'm going to see. Am I going to get further than a minute before you interrupt me again? I'm just saying, yeah, this is not this ain't our comics. It's written with a more adult mentality. So you have a guy like Starscream who is, you know, shit heel of shit heels. But they literally have written him now like he's still an asshole and an opportunist. But he's plagued by doubt and guilt over not only the part that he played. Metalhawk was the character you're talking about there that was best friend. Starscream also feels incredibly guilty about what happened to Bumblebee when Bumblebee was killed, so much so that he is literally seeing him, and Bumblebee has become the invisible Jiminy Cricket to Starscream's Pinocchio.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's literally how they're playing.
Bumblebee's death affected more than Starscream. Bumblebee was also Megatron's best friend in this series.
Okay.
And hold on. Let me finish, JT, before you see, you wanted me to be silent for you. So what happened was Bumblebee died, and Megatron took Bumblebee's Autobot symbol off of his dead chest and put it on his chest and declared himself now to be an Autobot. And this was way before the trial. And when I say trial, yes, Megatron is put on trial for his war crimes, and during his trial he denounces Decepticonism. Okay, go.
I'm not denying that happened, but there's a little more to that than just ripping the symbol off of Bumblebee's chest and declaring himself an Autobot. There was a storyline called Dark Cybertron, and one of the, again, things that we don't have enough time to talk about here, there is the concept of the dead universe. It's an alternate reality where a bunch of Transformers, you know, traveled to it, were consumed by it, and became basically undead, you know, like not quite, you know, Terrorcons, but they're undead. There's robots. Okay, yeah, that sounded stupid in my head, but why not?
Remember when zombies were popular 5 years ago? I remember.
So basically the D-Void, as they call it, and it sounds exactly as stupid as it sounds coming out of my mouth. This living, you know, the whole universe becomes like this living thing. It's like how they have Eternity in Marvel Comics. And it tries to invade, you know, the Transformers universe and, you know, spread to this side. And it basically, as part of a larger Machiavellian scheme, Shockwave's involved. He had built a space bridge into Megatron. Megatron was basically forced to subjugate his own people beyond what he had ever intended to do. And along the way, Bumblebee is, they've kind of become friends. You know, they're not quite besties, but they become friends. Megatron realizes that there are some things more important than his plans. And he and Bumblebee are trying to defeat Shockwave on his end of the plan. And Shockwave kills Bumblebee. And in order to snap Shockwave out of this mentality to like how his mind had been experimented on, Megatron takes the auto brand off of Bumblebee, straps it to his chest. The sight of this literally snaps Shockwave out of it for that split moment that allows Megatron and Optimus to kill him and thus defeating D-Void and preventing the annihilation of the universe.
And you know, I don't even have to say anything anymore because this what JT just talking about, this plot line is enough.
So, and the reason I explain it like that, now there, have you, you guys have all seen the Transformers Prime animated series, right?
Yes.
Okay. There was the finale to the series was a standalone DVD movie called Predacons Rising, where essentially, and one of the stupider things in this series, really the only stupid thing that I had a problem with, is the same thing that was revealed in Transformers The Last Night. The planet Earth is Unicron. Dear God, why? But in this movie, Unicron's spirit possesses Megatron's body, upgrades him. He's going to Cybertron to, you know, swallow the All Spark and extinguish all life in Cybertron and, you know, take over. And by the end of the movie, they've defeated Unicron. Megatron is freed from his control. And he has this line where he says, for all the time that I've spent trying to subjugate the universe, now that it happened to me, I find I've lost my taste for it. And that's what happens to Megatron in these comics, is like after all the bullshit, you know, he's gone through and seeing, you know, what happened with Bumblebee, and he kind of snapped back in his own mind to why he started, you know, this political revolution back in the days, because he just wanted to make things better. And he realized everything he's done since then hasn't helped anybody. And he's, yeah, he gave up his former way of life. Of course, giving it the title Decepticonism really kind of undersells the profound change that he has experienced. And after that happened, he said, look, I want to become an Autobot. I want to, you know, make up for this after I help you guys find Cyber Utopia, which is an ongoing plot point in the Transformers Robots in Disguise and now Transformers The Lost Light series. Basically, once they find Cyber Utopia, Megatron is going to surrender himself to the Executioner, and he will willingly allow his spark to be snuffed out. He just wants to try and pay back even a little bit of the pain and anguish that he's caused in the millions of years that his terror has reigned. And I think that's a really awesome point. I know it's not executed exceptionally well, but for what they've done in the comics, I think that's a hell of a way to change a character so profoundly. I mean, even in Marvel Comics, for a time, Magneto was a good guy and ran the Xavier School and trained the New Mutants. I mean, change can come to even the most unlikely characters. You just kind of have to give it a chance. You don't have to like it. I'm just saying it's not as bad as Megatron made best friends with Bumblebee and then he died and he was really sad.
But, you know, X-Men have always, that series has always been tremendously more political than the Transformers.
The moral ambiguity of characters like Magneto is because Magneto's whole thing was based on, yes, he has a point. He's going too far, but yes, he has a point. I mean, Megatron is named after a megaton bomb, just so he could have a scary name to sell toys.
I mean, but that's if you're going from the origin of the toys, like, you know, in the comics, like, he chose this path for a reason. He was trying to make life better for society.
But as I've been listening to this, the thing that I keep thinking is, like, wow, this doesn't sound like Transformers. I mean, you even kind of did it yourself, JT, when you cited one of the movies in which Unicron is actually planet Earth. And you're like, why? Well, that's how we feel when we hear all these weird stories about Megatron.
I've never said that these are the greatest comics ever, that they're perfect in all ways. I'm just saying they're a lot better than maybe some people give it credit for.
I know, but
I mean, you guys all have legitimate points. I'm not discounting that.
I mean, imagine if there was this movie series that you really loved for a very, very long time, and then a film comes out that completely contradicts the character paths of basically everyone in the franchise. Hold on.
X-Men Origins Wolverine?
Yeah, that too. And I mean, it's like, these aren't the characters. I mean, there are ways to be transformative with Megatron, again, pun fully intended, but from how it starts, it doesn't sound like Megatron. Megatron is, I would think of Megatron as just being someone who is so, you know, zealous for power. And of course, you could build an origin for that, but I mean, I would make it so much more that something happens that is more directly related to the conflict with the Autobots or a conflict with another faction. I know this is beginning to sound political, but do it less soapboxy, I guess. Because I'm hearing a lot of this, I'm like, this is really going a long way to explain something that's fairly simple to explain.
Well, it's like not our Transformers. Yeah, they don't actually call it that except one time. He says it that one time during the trial, and when he explains his decision to turn, there's actually a video. There's a guy named Chris McFeely on YouTube who does this series called The Basics about, you know, various characters and concepts in Transformers, and he does kind of a dramatic reading from More Than Meets the Eye number 32, where Ravage confronts Megatron about, you know, WTF guy, because unlike the Marvel comics, unlike the G1 cartoon and kind of like the Marvel comics, they treat the cassette characters as actual fully functioning, you know, sentient robotic organisms. And Megatron explains it to Ravage in this video. And if you guys can find it on YouTube, I highly recommend watching it. I mean, it doesn't make everything better, but to hear it, the words from the comics, you know, kind of smooths it out a bit.
This is the same Megatron that forced Ravage and Rumble to become cassettes for fucking Soundwave in this comic continuity.
Didn't they kind of bonded with Soundwave and helped him control his powers?
No, he was like, bitch, get in that fucking chest right fucking now.
Okay, well, you've read those comics a lot more recently than I, so, I mean, I'll have to go back and dig through my short boxes and find it. Now,
a direct quote.
Now, aside from all this stuff, there's a lot of cool stuff, there's a lot of goofy stuff in the IDW comics. I spoke about in a previous episode, they have another crossover with Marvel Comics where it's Transformers and Transformers New Avengers. And because both of these comics kind of started off around the same time, like the Transformers started within a few months of Brian Michael Bendis taking over Transformers after the Disassembled arc. And kind of like the G.I. Joe Transformers miniseries, it happened, but it doesn't count in the ongoing continuity. You know, it just happened one dimension to the left. It's kind of a fun read. They introduce concepts they introduce the Pretender technology as an experiment of shockwaves for dealing with hazardous environments where, like, the normal Cybertronian, you know, body could not handle levels of radiation and such, so they literally come up with the Pretender shells, and they're literally just jumped up in counter suits. It's not like they can transform and split apart, and all of a sudden you've got two fully functioning organisms. And they brought in the Beast Bots from one of the Lost Colonies. They referenced Transformers Cybertron, which is arguably my favorite of the Unicron trilogy. Introducing that plant, they've brought in like a Knockout from Transformers Prime. There's a lot of stuff. This is kind of like they cherry pick some of the best things, the most popular things from other Transformer, you know, mythos, and brought it in, made it their own, and you know, kind of makes it work within the greater thing. I mean, overall, yeah, I love these comics. I know you guys don't love them to a great extent. I'm just saying, if you give it a chance.
This is like the one kid that you don't want to play with your fucking toys, and he breaks them all the fucking time. That's what IDW is.
It's like the wimpy kid.
Don't sully the Transformers with Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Ben.
I'm just saying IDW is like him. He's breaking your toys, and your mother's forcing you to play with him.
I don't think they're really breaking. Now, I'm going to say, is there one question each of you guys have that you would want me to try and explain for you that you just can't get?
No, I got it. I just want the bread. Can you explain your thoughts on Decepticonism?
It's fucking retarded is what it is. It's somebody trying to be a big boy when they write the comics. They're trying to fucking, what do you call it, pander to social justice. And they're just making up fucking terms. And it's cringy to fucking read. Like I said, IDW comics for the past 5 years or so have been soapboxes, and they've been written by cringy fucks who should not be touching comics at all. Same with the G.I. Joe series. It's a big problem in IDW.
Yeah, except they fired that guy that was making G.I. Joe in an SJW soapbox. And they're only putting out 3 issues of that series, as I recall.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing, and then this is like, you know, the final thing that I'll bring up here. For the longest time, IDW had their own G.I. Joe continuity. They had their Transformers continuity. And then they got into licensing other Hasbro toy lines. They brought in Mask, Rom the Space Knight. Visionaries have been brought into it now.
Oh my god.
That, as cool as it is to see the Visionaries brought back in any form, because I seriously think I always wish the cartoon series had gone on a bit longer than like the 13 episodes that it did. They had a crossover in 2015 called Revolution, which is they had been publishing an Action Man comic. They introduced Mask in this crossover. They brought Rom in and the Micronauts. And it's literally that. And this is one of the things, like, I love the idea. It's a batshit crazy idea for a crossover, and I kind of love it, but I'll agree it also doesn't make sense. That literally, in the G.I. Joe continuity, they had Cobra come out of the shadows and being this, you know, centuries-long secret global criminal cabal. You know, they nuke the Golden Triangle in the Asian countries. Like, they literally nuke it. And this is never referenced in Transformers, but this has all been happening at the same time as the Megatron launches an attack on New York City and wastes a large part of it. And then everyone hates giant talking robots. And then they introduce the idea that everything that happened in G.I. Joe before they're introduced in Revolution happened in the years before Megatron, you know, whomped on New York City. And I can read a lot of comic books and I can excuse a lot of shit. I cannot excuse that. That this is mental gymnastics and sliding timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly bullshit that makes Marvel's sliding time scale make sense.
Well, IDW has shitty fucking continuity. Really bad. Like, a perfect example is RC and female Transformers. They came up with the idea that, oh, there's no female Transformers, and we're going to cut off RC's balls and make him a her. Oh, we'll give her an edgy fucking origin story, too, where she's a fucking psychopath, should be locked up, but, you know, she had her balls cut off, so it's all worth it, I guess. And then they introduced female Transformers later on.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense that, you know, if they had just had RC and kind of explored the idea of gender in a non-gender society before that with just her, that would have made it more interesting. Not really progressive, mind you, but more interesting. But it's just lazy writing. I'll agree. It's really lazy writing to just later bring in Alita, one of the other female Transformers, and like, oh yeah, we were here all the time. Just you guys forgot about us. Why?
Because it's lazy. It's easy.
Yeah.
Well, as soon as because the biggest thing is a writer wants certain things, and then the next writer might want different things. And the problem is each writer, like, basically has their own vision of the Transformers universe. There is no one guy who's, like an editor that's saying no. Basically, each time someone comes in, they're like, yeah, go ahead, do whatever the fuck you want.
Like Rian Johnson.
Yep.
I mean, I wouldn't say that it's laziness. It's more like each writer has his or her own agenda, and so they're just at liberty to kind of force things into the storyline that don't need to be explained that hard. I mean, when I think about female Transformers, my thought was, well, pretty much all the female Transformers are Autobots. So my thought was that there are other planets that have like what would you call that? Like a two-form gender system where like one is male, one is female. And so they look at that and say, well, maybe we should have some representation. God, I hate that term now, but basically do that where like, you know, next time we make Autobots, let's make some female ones or some that at least appear female to kind of be ambassadors so that, you know, it doesn't look like a huge robot sausage party when they show up on other people's planets. Basically kind of like a political sort of, thing. I mean, basically do it much simpler than what this story, these stories are trying to do. Instead of like going to such great lengths to have RC transform from male to female and try to come up with an explanation as to why the female Autobots disappeared, it's much simpler to just say, hey, this is a very simple why we did that.
No, I agree with you. Like I said before, both the best and worst thing about the IDW Transformers comics is if you've been there from the beginning and you've read all the comics as I have, it's more rewarding because you've been there for the journey and you can go back and look at the comics in a different light and say, oh yeah, you can see how that works. Now, if you're not somebody that's been there from the beginning, then yeah, it's very disconcerting. It's incredibly confusing and way overly complicated. But
would you say that's a weakness with attracting new readers?
I think that's entirely a weakness with attracting new readers. The problem is, and that's exactly the problem, unfortunately, is like I've been there since the beginning and I love all the comics and it makes sense to me because, you know, I've read everything because I'm a huge Transformers comic fan. But for somebody coming in, like there, you can be a dad and want to introduce your son to the comics, but you'd be better off, you know, getting him like the Transformers animated comic or some of the more kid-friendly stuff like Rescue Bots and that, because there isn't this decade-long of continuity already, right? And that's like any reader just getting into it, you know, you you can go back and dig into that backstory if you want, but it's going to be one hell of a slog. So it's better to have something like the Aligned continuity, which encompasses, you know, the War for Cybertron, Fall of Cybertron, and Transformers Prime, and then Rescue Bots, because it's technically part of that continuity too. There's stuff like that. I mean, honestly, if you want to get anybody into Transformers, just take them back to G1. You know, go back to the 80s series. You get them those, you know, four seasons in the movie.
I would be very selective with which episodes I show them.
I'm sorry. For every good episode, there's a bad episode, and you can't ignore the good or the bad. So Powerglide's girlfriend and Carbamia is right up there with, Return of Optimus Prime and the movie. I mean, you can't ignore.
Yes, you can. The bad stuff.
I almost think the series should have ended at the movie.
Because
I don't even like the Return of Optimus Prime.
Yeah, but as a kid, I loved it, if only for the fact that that's damn right. He's Robot Jesus, and he doesn't die. I mean, I cried in the theater when I saw the animated movie. I was 6. Don't judge. And I wasn't the only one crying in that theater.
Oh, no.
You're younger than me, aren't you?
I was born in 1980.
Wow.
Oh, the same age.
So you were really scarred.
No, I was like 4 or 5 when I saw it in the theater, though.
Yeah, I was born July 4th, 1980, and I saw it like the late summer, early fall of 86 when it came out. It's one of the first movies that I didn't have my mom or my dad sitting next to me in the theater. It was just me, my brothers, and a couple of cousins and some other friends. You know, we kind of made it like a group thing.
Back to the comics. Yeah. I think the message overall is continuity has become a mess.
Yes, it has.
Storytelling has turned into soapboxing, and now you have something that doesn't resemble Autobots waging their battle to defeat the evil forces of the Decepticons anymore.
And they also kind of throw characters to the wind. I mean, what made G1 special was that within 3 lines of hearing Optimus Prime, you get it. You know exactly who he is, and you could build off of that and like build up his character. But the original writers were very good at establishing these characters, even like the weak ones, like Huffer, who never really amounted to anything. You kind of get who he is, but the voice acting was part of it because everyone on that show was a character actor. But with the comics, even the ones that I like, I don't quite get that all the time. And I do consider that a weakness of the comics, is that when you get writers who, specifically even writers that have social agendas, they tend to ignore the established characterizations, and they present this new character that isn't Megatron and isn't Optimus Prime. And it just makes me put the book down.
Yeah.
Megatron was his slave name.
No, there are a few within the continuity, there are a few comics that I really would like to recommend. You don't have to read them. I mean, you can read them without having to really read everything. Now, there is a series of ongoing one-shots called Spotlights, which focus on specific characters. Sometimes it ties into whatever the big storyline is. Most times it's just a snapshot of this character at a certain moment in their history, you know, juxtaposed with, you know, the Great War. There's Transformers Stormbringer, which features Don Figueroa art. He's a guy, one of the few Transformers artists that kept with the franchise after getting screwed by Pat Lee and Dreamwave.
Is this the guy that likes throwing GoBots in, like, is like dead bodies?
I don't know for certain.
What's his name again?
Don Figueroa.
Okay, I'm going to look him up really quick.
Yeah. Who is killing a cat?
I have a cat. She keeps leaping up into my lap.
Kitty wants pets. So, the Spotlights, Stormbringer. There is a miniseries and a Spotlight issue on the character Drift, who was a Decepticon, and he converted to being a Transformer after being such an asshole that the rest of the Decepticons kicked him out, and then he kind of had a moment of self-realization. It's a really cool character. He's basically, he fights with swords. He just never uses a blaster, so he's got this whole kind of samurai aesthetic going on, which I really liked. The All Hail Megatron series, solid art, kind of brought the Transformers out of the whole robots in disguise thing on Earth, and it's that kind of quantum leap forward sort of thing. Like they force the characters out of the comfort zone that a lot of people had had them in. There's The Last Stand and Sins of the Wreckers miniseries, which are really cool. Specifically, Sins introduces character like Beast Wars style Transformers from the Japanese Beast Wars series.
Beast of Wars?
Beast Wars one, Neo.
The ones where they had like a penguin and a
rabbit. Actually,
Leo Convoy.
Ooh. Stampy the transforming robot actually is one of the characters in Sins of the Wreckers. There's even some tie-in stuff with some IDW-wide crossovers. Like they had the Infestation crossovers. There was two of those, which basically involved zombies and then Cthulhu trying to infect all the different continuities of the different comics they had. So they basically had the first one involves a IDW original series called CVO or Covert Vampiric Ops, where it's a black ops squad of vampires that work for the government. One of the vampires gets bit by a zombie and becomes possessed by the zombie hive mind and sends copies of herself into like Transformers and G.I. Joe and the Ghostbusters comic. And it's cool to read it, but it makes not one lick of goddamn sense. And it's really goddamn stupid. I'm going to admit that. There's an Ironhide miniseries, which focuses exclusively on the character. And one final thing, I have, through my own research and consulting with various reading order lists online, I have come up with a comprehensive reading order continuity. This, you read them in this order, the storyline would all make sense. I can provide it upon request, although I don't think that's going to fucking happen. I will say that in the context of the storyline, there's the first ongoing or second ongoing miniseries, just The Transformers, ends with issue number 31, and it takes place like 5 million years in the future. There's this other planet that was introduced called Gorlam Prime, which through various shenanigans of various villains has become another Cybertron. And you see like this ancient senior citizen Ironhide, and he's still alive telling old war stories and just keeping an eye on all these young whippersnapper robots. And if they ever end the series, you can take that issue, put it at the final comic in the line. That would serve as the ultimate, you know, final issue for the Transformers comics in this timeline. So it's 1-3 for the comics, 3 against, 1 against. You know, not everyone's going to love this timeline. You know, like I said, I love it since the beginning. I dig everything they've done. Not all of it has been gold, but it's not quite polishing a turd, in my opinion.
It's a fucking turd is what it is.
Yeah.
It's stinky fucking peanut-filled diarrhea.
Have they ever tried to merge the concept of the Pretenders and the Beast Wars together? Because they're if you look at them, they're very similar in premise.
The Beast Wars, not so much. Like, IDW has done two different Beast Wars miniseries where they do time travel shenanigans. So it's technically taking place during the third season of the Beast Wars cartoon, but they're all the characters involved are like 1 second out of phase with what's going on there with Optimus Primal and Dragon Megatron. So it's still happening, and there's, you know, Predacons and Maximals. And
so how do they explain Predacons and Maximals in this? Because Predacons and Maximals are supposed to be like, they're supposed to be like the great upgrade, where Autobots and Decepticons become Predacons and Maximals because they're more energy efficient. And
okay, I can explain that. Now, the first versions of the Predacons and Maximals like continuity wise, are the ones introduced in Sins of the Wreckers. They are the first ones to adopt, you know, I think they use bioorganic or biotechnic shells, which are spun off from the technology of, like, the Pretender technology of sorts. The Predacons and Maximals introduced in Ascension and the, like, I think that was the first miniseries, and, like, the two Beast Wars miniseries, they are from the far future where Predacons and Maximals have become, you know, the next evolution of Cybertronian technology, and they are more smaller and more energy efficient.
See, I had a mild aneurysm like a couple minutes ago when you said something about time travel and being 1 second out of phase. That's the kind of shenanigans in comic books that I hate.
Well, they can't all be Rip Master or Booster Gold now, can we?
Mm-hmm. Well, the point is, and let's wrap this up because I feel like basically we have three people here that thinks that these comics sound and have read and read like garbage, and one person is like, no, is that, if you give it a try. So I think basically that's where we are right now. I think no one's convincing anybody else of their side of it, because basically it can happen to where JT's like, RC's a tranny, and Red's like, RC's a goddamn tranny. It's like you're saying the same thing but with different tones.
I want people to know that I have nothing wrong, nothing against transgenders. It's just I have a fucking problem with horrible storylines.
That's fair.
I apologize if it felt like I was painting that, but I was painting that basically two different reactions to the exact same synopsis is my point. And I think that's a good place to wrap it up, because that's what's going to happen on this show, is you're getting two different reactions to the exact same damn synopsis.
Don't even get me started on the steampunk Transformers comic they did.
And this is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
And TV's Mr. Neil.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.
Farewell.
End me. End me now.